and John Hite.
Rattler awaits a shotgun snap, gets it. Blitz coming, pressure coming. Barrett Carter getting it and sacking Rattler.
They do have a timeout. Decide not to use it. Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry! With 0.6 seconds remaining.
He could have easily gotten 5 or 6 yards if he would have just pulled that thing down and dove forward.
But why do you even ponder passing? I mean, you can take a knee and try a 56-yard field goal. This is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl.
Oh, what a play by Mike Williams. A touchdown of 19 yards.
I mean, he put Jamarcus King on his back and gave that chicken a ride.
He throws shoes.
Clark in a straight jacket.
Oh, he didn't need to do that. He threw it away. Hitting Pickens.
To the sideline, caught. First down. Woo!
What a hit! Denzel Ward! You got barbecue back there? And you didn't invite me? Hurt my feelings!
Well, there's Chase Hunter. 2 seconds, one. Launches a three. Good if it goes! It does! Chase Hunter! The three! At the buzzer! Sends Clemson into the locker room! Up 10! 35! 25!
A double pumper. That was a double pump shot.
That was another one from the band down by the river.
Now, let's go live to Faxon Childress and John Hite.
We welcome you in, everybody. It's the Wednesday edition of Faxon Sports with Faxon Childress and John Hite right here on The Roar. Wednesday, June 25th, 2025. We are glad to have you with us with much to discuss on a jam-packed edition of the program. It's draft day, NBA draft day. We'll be running you through a preview of who's going where. We obviously all know that Cooper Flagg's going number one in the draft, but I'll give my thoughts, my commentary, and my predictions on tonight's NBA draft. We'll also talk Atlanta Braves baseball because it was a great night last night to be an Atlanta Braves fan. A 7-4 win over those New York Mets, and New York really just providing the springboard for Atlanta to have some hope with their season here in the last couple of weeks. So excited to discuss that and unpack some Braves baseball. We've got some Clemson football topics to get to. I want to talk about the wide receivers. I was talking to our intern Landon on the way in. He did his two-minute drill because TJ Moore gave his top five Clemson wide receivers ever. I want to talk about TJ's list, discuss that briefly, but I also want to talk about the production anticipated from Clemson's best wide receiver room in the last 5 to 6 years. We're going to get some quotes and commentary as well on the Ace Bailey saga as he's continuing to allegedly slide and have his stock fall after working out for a grand total of zero teams as a projected top five pick. So a lot to discuss today on the program. And as always, 654-ROAR is the number. And we had more trades last night as well. We had the Nuggets president coming out and making cryptic comments about potentially moving Jokic in the future. There's a lot going on right now in the NBA world, especially on the trade market. John, how was your Tuesday, brother? Good Tuesday?
Tuesday was solid. Wednesday starting off strong, though. It was a interesting start to the morning. Went to take the dog out at about 6 a.m. We're on a nice little stroll. And then somehow, some way, I still can't figure out how this occurred. The leash just became detached from the collar.
Really?
And you've met the puppy.
Uh-oh, yeah.
You know that she can move with a little bit of speed.
There's some speed there.
Yes, and she made her way through several of my neighbor's yards this morning, and I'm out there running around having to chase down and tackle a puppy in someone's front yard this morning. So that was who needs a cup of coffee when you're out there tackling a three-month-old dog at 10 after 6 in the morning?
And that's like the dynamic, too, when you finally tackle him, like the puppy thinks you're playing.
She thought it was a game yeah. The entire time.
Yep.
And meanwhile, I'm sitting here trying not to, like, holler at this dog. Because it's 6 a.m. in a residential neighborhood, and that's the last thing I want is my neighbors to wake up, look outside, and just see me hollering and chasing this dog around. So it was an interesting start to the morning, for sure.
You know you're cooked when the dog gets off the leash, and then they'll, like, turn around back and look at you and kind of, drop a little bit, like, you're ready to play.
She got the low butt, and then she took off.
It's always the low butt. Yep. That's what it is every time with the puppies, and then they're bolting on you.
Yeah, and she just couldn't figure out, like, What's the big deal? I thought we were out having fun this morning, ready to tackle the day, and we literally did. So it was an interesting start to the morning, But thankfully, it's calmed down, settled down, and here to talk a little sports. And I'm looking forward to you educating me on the NBA draft this evening. Because this is a process. I talked about it some yesterday. Like, I start paying attention to the NFL draft stuff like 2 to 3 months out.
Yeah.
And consume content about it on a regular basis. I said yesterday on the show that I wasn't aware the NBA draft was tonight until yesterday. Like, it just kind of snuck up on me. I am fascinated by this evening to see, you know, what, obviously we know what the number one pick is going to be. And we feel pretty good about the Spurs with Dylan Harper at 2, correct?
Yes, Dylan Harper. I will say this. That's like the number one sort of question mark of this draft is, are the Spurs going to stay or are they going to go? Because that's been a very aggressively pursued draft pick by many. The indications are that they're just going to stay put and take Harper, but people have kind of worked under the assumption that if Giannis were to get moved, number two would be going to Milwaukee as a part of that package. Now, that seems to have cooled down. Giannis appears to be staying in Milwaukee for at least the time being, which I don't know if is a good decision for Giannis, but he is extremely loyal. You got to give him that. But yes, that currently is the indication. Dylan Harper's going number two in the draft. The question is San Antonio going to keep the pick, or are they going to move the pick and try and get another star to put next to Wemby? I think they're just going to keep it. But you do have to remember, John, this is another reason that people aren't necessarily sold that Harper's going two to the Spurs. They have the rookie of the year from last year in Stephon Castle from UConn, who plays point guard. They traded for De'Aaron Fox from Sacramento, who plays point guard. Now, they're in on Dylan Harper, who plays point guard. The bigger issue, none of those guys can shoot. So they have three point guards, if they take Harper, who are all uber-talented and great passers and great finishers and could get to the rim. But the biggest need for San Antonio as a team structurally is shooting. So that's kind of the dynamic that a lot of these draft guys online have been juggling the last couple of weeks is, you know, do you trade Dylan Harper and risk trading away a future star caliber point guard to try and improve your roster in the short term around Wemby? Or do you just take the best prospect available and let everything work itself out?
See, wouldn't it make more sense for the Spurs at 2 to take Trey Johnson?
It could.
In terms of fitting in their lineup and fitting with the pieces in which they have.
Yeah.
Because I think in terms of like a guard scorer, he's the best one in the draft.
He fits more traditionally what you would anticipate them wanting slash needing at that spot. As far as Johnson goes, he's a guy that's seen his stock raise drastically in the last couple of weeks. I think people were realizing that, you know, guys that can come into the league immediately and create their own shot and get their own shot off are always going to have value. It'll be intriguing to see where Johnson goes. I could really see him going anywhere between, I don't know if as high as 2, but maybe even 2 to 8, anywhere in that range. And I guess that's kind of the big question right now is, where is Ace Bailey going? Because that's going to throw a wrench in everything. Paul George went on a podcast with some comments on this. I'm gonna send you a minute clip or so, John, during the break to play when we get back on the Bailey thing, because Paul George called him out. He said he thought that the way that he's gone about these things have been entirely wrong, and about how he hasn't necessarily earned that right to be able to pick where he wants to go. And he acknowledged the fact that he wanted to be the number one option, but he simultaneously said, this might be something we see more with these kids making more and more money in college, and talked about he's already got money, so he's not worried about a $2-3 million difference in the signing bonus from the third pick to the seventh pick, and instead he's trying to push his way to where he can go get the most shots available.
I was listening to something this morning. I'm curious if you would agree with the logic here. Because this is, like I said, this is all very kind of new to me. I'm not big into the NBA draft. But is Ace Bailey playing the long game here? And, like, is he trying to, instead of going to the 76ers, where you are, like, the fourth or fifth option, right, if everybody's healthy on that team?
Yes.
Or is he trying to get to Utah, Washington, Brooklyn as the number one option, so when you come to the max contract in a couple of seasons,
bingo,
he has the bigger numbers, the bigger stats?
That's what it is. I truly believe that's the new method for a lot of these draft picks is let me try and go shot chuck on a bad team so I can average 23, and then when that max rolls around, they have to pay me. Like, that's what LaMelo did, And yep. there have been other people that have followed those steps and followed that blueprint. I'm not saying that's the right thing to do.
A lot of people thought that's what Cade Cunningham was doing until they actually turned decent.
Yeah, right, exactly. And Cade's actually a good player that's got that thing turned around. So I think that's what Ace Bailey wants to do, John. I think he wants to go to a bad team, shot Chuck as a number one option, get his max contract, and then request a trade. Which is ridiculous, but it's the reality of the situation.
I can understand some of the logic of you're playing the long game from a contract standpoint.
Yes.
I think we've seen a lot of athletes in different sports do that. You set yourself up for the next contract. I don't like, though, that the strategy is, I'm just going to sit here, milk this franchise and this fan base for all they're worth, and then once I get the big penny, once I get my Bradley Beal contract, then I'm going to ask to be traded. I don't like that process. I don't like using the small market teams as a minor league farm system for the other clubs.
That's essentially what Ace Bailey is trying to force his way into, is my understanding of the situation. And his camp continues to reiterate that he wants shots. He wants to go be the guy, the focal point of an offense somewhere. So
how would the NBA try to curb this type of a movement? Like, what could the league do to maybe, you know, curb some of this stuff? Because I think it could be a trend that if this proves beneficial to him and he gets what he wants out of this process,
yeah,
that I do agree you will see more do this down the road. What is something the league can do? Without collusion, right, which... Fascinating episode of Pablo Torre finds out yesterday about that in the NFL. Goodness gracious, we have some time. We'll get into that. Like, what do you do to stop this type of a process? Because I'm not a huge Paul George fan by any means. I appreciate the fact that he's speaking out against trying to pave your own way.
Yeah.
But I just, like I said, I understand, like, I don't want to have collusion here, because that's something you don't need to have in a professional sports league. But I don't know what you do to kind of stop some of this, because the only people who don't work out like this are some of the international prospects who aren't on U.S. soil in which to do those workouts.
Yeah, a texter gets in with kind of a harsh reality of the situation, which is exactly what I was about to say. I don't think there's anything you can do. I think that the players have all the power with the way that this collective bargaining agreement has been set up. I think that the players have all the power in general terms, because guess what? Ace Bailey knows that somebody is going to draft him in the top 10. He doesn't have to work out with these teams. He's talented enough to where it doesn't matter. So this isn't like the NFL, where you have 7 rounds and you have 3 different days and there's a ton of picks and you got 53 guys to fill out each roster. There's 15 dudes a roster here, and there's only 30 first-round picks, and those guys are expected to come in and immediately play. And there's no third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round to where you can work your way up the depth chart and avoid getting cut and try and backdoor onto the 53-man roster. That's not what this is about. Like, if you get drafted in the top 10, you're anticipated to come in and play and contribute immediately. That's what the NBA has always been about. It's your top 10 picks are going to get showcased on your worst teams, and you're going to see what those guys have got in the subsequent year. So as far as preventing this going forward, I'm not sure that there's anything that they can do. However, I will say this. Nothing's preventing Charlotte from drafting Ace Bailey at number 4 just because he wouldn't work out there. Nothing is preventing Utah from drafting Ace Bailey at number 5 just because he wouldn't work out there.
That's such a Charlotte move.
And it's the same thing to be said about Philadelphia. Like, if you really... I don't remember the last time we saw, like, a Breeze type of thing, or an Eli Manning type of thing, rather, or a holdout at the top of the draft with a player in the NBA. I could be missing something, and it could just be slipping my memory. I don't remember the last time that happened. And to be frank, if Ace Bailey were to decline some massive signing bonus and contract from the Philadelphia 76ers, he would look like an absolute moron. And to further that point, if he wants to go in there and demand the trade and bang the table for a trade immediately from Philadelphia, I think he would look like as big of a moron as possible, because he doesn't have any leverage. That's the thing here. You got to think about the position that Bailey and his agent and his camp are in. They are trying to utilize the leverage while they have it, because this is all they have, right? From a logical standpoint, once that clock hits 5 minutes or whatever it is for the number one pick tonight, Ace Bailey's leverage is gone. These teams are on the clock. These teams are going to make the best selection for the future of their franchise. And at the end of the day, I don't think Charlotte, Utah, etc. really give a rip whether he worked out or not. You got 30 games of college tape available and high school tape available and NBA scouts and all of these different things and showcases and EYBL and AAU where you've seen Ace Bailey play and play basketball. You know who he is as a player at this point. So for me personally, I'm in the headspace as of right now that within the top 10 of the draft, you just take the best player available. I have gone further and further towards that side of things is screw the fit, we'll figure it out. It's a positionless era of the NBA, and you want the best player available on your team because guess what? There's nothing preventing you from trading that player down the road, and there's nothing preventing you from trying to flip that player, maybe even on draft day, to try and get back up or get some future capital. So I think we're going to see a scenario tonight, to be honest, John, where a team drafts Ace Bailey that Ace Bailey does not want to play for. And it's going to be interesting to see how that transpires after the fact because every indication would point us towards the fact that he is trying to force his way to Washington, which is just like, why? But then again, it's because of the shots and the opportunity available to go be the number one option.
Do you think we have a scenario with Ace Bailey where the team that drafts him is not the team that he does the press conference for in 2 days?
I think there's a reality in
which
that exists.
Do we have an SGA where he comes up and puts on the Hornets hat and then is traded to the Thunder 20 minutes later?
I could definitely see that with the Jazz specifically at 5. I could see the Jazz being in because the Jazz have been trying to move down from 5 and up from 5, funnily enough. Like, they're shopping that pick because that's the worst slot in this draft. There's a massive drop-off after Harper. If you want to be super high on a guy like VJ Edgecombe, I'm not personally, but that's probably the third best prospect in this class pound for pound. So it's going to be intriguing to see how everything transpires tonight. The NBA draft's always a ton of fun, and we've got much more to discuss on this and more throughout the course of the program today. John, on the other side, I want to talk a little bit about a team that did make a trade yesterday and a team that I think could have a chance to shake all of this up on draft day tonight. And that would be the Boston Celtics, who are now without two focal points of their 2024 championship team as they've moved on from Drew Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis, sending Porzingis' expiring deal to the Atlanta Hawks, which I think makes the Hawks a lot better. So we'll unpack that trade and more, and we'll also get to Delvin on the other side of a short break here. Phone lines, Adams Co. Roofing text line are open at 654-ROAR. Going to do another segment of NBA Draft and shift gears to some Braves baseball and some Clemson football after that with Faxon and John right here on the Roar.
Jeff Carey here from Sit and Sleep Upstate Furniture Galleries in Easley. Don't put off your comfort any longer, because at Sit and Sleep Upstate, we are putting on a recliner bonanza with literally hundreds of recliners on blowout pricing. With faux leather rocker recliners starting at $449, big man recliners for just $699, and powered leather recliners for only $849, you do not want to miss this. Only at Sit and Sleep Upstate Furniture Galleries, Highway 123 in Easley.
I'm Ryan Beasley. My office works with clients in all areas of state and federal criminal defense to include pre-arrest investigations, white-collar defense, as well as student conduct issues at colleges and universities. Our team works in courts across the state to include city court, magistrate court, state court, and federal court. Our responsive and proactive approach in all cases is relationship-driven, client-centric, and resolution-focused. We look forward to the opportunity to work with you. Please give us a call at 864-679-7777 or find us on the web at www.ryanbeasleylaw.com.
Hey Clemson family, I'm Jeff Scott, former assistant coach and proud member of two national championship teams. Success on the football field takes teamwork, vision, and a great game plan. I partnered with fellow Clemson alum Eric Newton to create Newton Scott & Associates. From Tigertown to Lake Kiwi, we're your championship team, here to help you buy, sell, or build. When it's time to make your next move, trust the winning team, Newton Scott & Associates. Real estate, the Clemson way. Visit us at newtonscottsc.com.
If you're trying to get through your daily activities and you're noticing you can't because you're focusing more on your pain than being able to enjoy the moment, those are the patients that we're looking to treat because we can make a difference.
That's Dr. Ashley Caravelli, a medical director for QC Kinetics.
What we're doing at QC Kinetics is offering treatments that help with joint preservation. We use cutting-edge technology in our in-house lab to harness your body's natural healing powers and target the areas where you need them the most. fast.
These are regenerative, non-surgical treatments, and QC Kinetics is the nation's leader, delivering lasting relief to tens of thousands of patients.
What we do know is that the sooner we start treatment, the sooner you'll see relief.
So don't wait another minute. See if you're a good candidate for these non-surgical treatments for joint pain. The consultation is completely free.
Call QC Kinetics, 864-448-3772. That's 864-448-3772. 864-448-3772.
Guys, when was the last time you actually felt like you? Dragging through the day, zero drive, stuck with that gut? It might be low T. At Low Country Male, we make testosterone replacement simple and affordable. Plans start at just $200 a month that includes your labs, medication, and doctor visits. More muscle, more energy, more confidence. Get back to the man you used to be or better. Visit lowcountrymale.com. That's lowcountrymail.com.
Mr. Rage here, inviting you to join 2011 Women's World Welterweight Arm Wrestling Champion Ramona as we discuss why the Boston Celtics would have traded Kristaps Porzingis 3 seconds after I went off the air on Tuesday. We also talk Braves Mets, although it's really just Braves through four games, NFL win totals, and a complete NFL breakdown. College football, as always, it's a Rageous Wednesday. See you at 3.
Hey, Joe Fortenball here. Whether you're locking in your home run picks or riding with your favorite golfers this summer, ESPN Bet is your sportsbook for all the action. Go from checking stats on your favorite teams and players to placing bets in just a few taps. Plus, new customers can get $100 in bonus bets when you make your first $10 wager. Download the ESPN Bet app and sign up with the promo code JOEQ to get started today. Must be 21 plus. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Offer not available in New York.
Hey, listen to this. All I needed was a new starter. Got a great deal on eBay. Did it myself.
Yeah, that's cool. But how about the soft purr of an upgraded exhaust when it fits just right?
Yeah, for me, it's the little things. Like these new windshield wipers from eBay I installed.
From small fixes to big upgrades, eBay has all the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things. People. Love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Powered by Upcountry Fiber, we are 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Providing fiber internet, HD TV, and phone service, Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
The Braves, the Bravos, the team of the 90s, or whatever else you call them.
First pitch, ground ball right side, diving stop by Ozzie. From his knee, two first, got him. Whoa, what a play by Albies. Have a day.
You can catch all their games right here on The Roar, where every day is game day.
We welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and John Eye continues right here on The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. We're continuing to talk some NBA draft as it's draft day. Going to talk some Braves baseball, some Clemson and college football, and more throughout the course of the program. We'd love for you to join us. We're going to come to Delvin momentarily on our phone lines. But first, we got three or four different texts all along the same lines, John. And it's asking where the Clemson potential pros' involvement is in tonight's NBA draft. As far as Victor Locken and Chase Hunter go, I think Victor Locken has a better chance to be drafted than Chase Hunter, based off of my understanding. I've seen Locken, you know, towards the back end of a couple second rounds. I've seen Chase Hunter in a similar range in some mock drafts. But when talking about PJ Hall last year and talking about Hunter Tyson last year on the air, I echoed a pretty similar, or 2 years ago rather, I echoed a pretty similar sentiment, which is, the second round in the NBA is about relationships with agents and teams. So with PJ chose to go undrafted last year, for folks that don't know that. He had a relationship with the Nuggets. His agent had a relationship with the Nuggets, right? You know, he worked out for them in the pre-draft process. They expressed interest that there was going to be, you know, a two-way contract available for him to sign if he went undrafted, if they couldn't move back up and go get him. And then there were a couple teams, I'm under the impression there were a couple teams that called him, and he was like, nah, I've already got a spot. That's kind of how this thing works in the second round of the NBA draft. You want to go somewhere, and your agent is trying to put you somewhere where you can make a roster or you can sign a two-way contract. So as far as projecting a team or projecting a potential pick range, I have no idea, because the second round of the NBA is really just a political warfare where your agent is trying to get you wherever you can try and play. Like, I wouldn't have thought Hunter Tyson had any chance of going as high as he did, but he had a great relationship and it was a great fit, and the Nuggets really liked him, so they picked him at like 37.
Doesn't some of it have to do when you get into the second round and then maybe some of the undrafted stuff is a lot of it like trying to round out your summer league?
Yes.
Like, to see how you want to, like for example, if a team doesn't have a lot of bigs going into the summer, I could see someone late second round taking a flyer on Victor Lockin. Not just one, you could have them for summer league and team. You just kind of see what you have with them.
Yeah.
So I think there's some of that as well in the second round. It's more of, do you have a need for him to get through the next couple of months, or, you know, you don't even care.
And with seconds in the NBA, there's not a lot of risk as well. So you got to think, if somebody likes a trait or if somebody likes your body or something that you bring to the table, maybe it's like your wingspan and you find a franchise that really prioritizes that. Or Chase Hunter's a 6'4 guard. Maybe somebody's looking for a combo guard to come off their bench. Or maybe somebody needs a number one option on their G League team, so they're going to sign him to a two-way contract and let him go average 24 points per game in the G League like PJ Hall did. Then you get called back up. There's a lot of different ways to go with this avenue, right? And it's not necessarily a direct path to being on the court and playing in the NBA on like an actual team with meaningful minutes. But what it is a way to consistently get paid to dribble a basketball and to stick around the league for as long as possible, which,
right,
if we're being honest with ourselves, when you get drafted in the second round, that is the goal. The goal is to stick in the league for as long as humanly possible. I think Chase Hunter and Victor Lockin have a chance to do that.
To make money domestically and not internationally.
Correct.
Playing basketball.
Yes.
That's the goal.
Jed says, some are saying Chase is a sleeper to get drafted late. He had good grades, competition ratings at Portsmouth, and G League cap. To be honest with you, man, the only hesitation with drafting Chase Hunter and the fact that he's not getting first-round buzz or late first-round buzz is age. That's really the only thing.
Right.
He's 24 years old, and we're in a league nowadays where there is a ridiculous prioritization of taking 18- and 19-year-olds, and Chase is 6 years older than a lot of the guys that are going to be called tonight in that top 10, top 15 range. So, it's not super fair, but it is what it is, because people in the NBA believe that your athletic cap is going to start to wane around 29 or 30, because that's typically what we've seen, even with the improvement of medicine, nutrition, etc. But I really do think Chase has a modern NBA build as far as a combo guard standpoint goes. I'm not sure what his role would ever potentially look like, hypothetically speaking, but I think Chase Hunter could turn himself into like a bench NBA guard fairly easily if given an opportunity. He has the skill set to do that, and he can play point guard and shooting guard, which is very valuable.
Well, I think, you know, part of his issue is kind of the same as it is in football. You want to be able to have them under contract at a young age with room to grow.
Yeah.
And with Chase, so let's say all things worked out and he stuck. You would much rather give a second contract to a guy who is now Chase Hunter's age versus Chase Hunter at 28 years old or 27
yes,
years old.
Exactly.
That's more control for the team.
That's exactly the truth. And as far as Lockin goes, 6'5", 4 roar, if you guys want to get in on any of this. As far as Lockin goes, again, it's fit. And with big men specifically, it's a little bit easier to find a spot, if that makes sense, because how many 7-footers are even walking the planet with us?
The good Lord makes a lot more 6'4 guys than he does 7-foot.
Exactly. So Lockin, I think Lockin played his way into draft talks this year because of the development that Coach Brownell, Coach Bender, the rest of their excellent staff were able to, you know, kind of instill in him. He expanded his game and became a very consistent three-point shooter. He was a good rim protector at times that, you know, his really only big bugaboo in college was foul trouble. That was the big thing with Lockin. Lockin was really good when he was on the court, when he could stay out of foul trouble. Maybe you could make a little bit of a gripe or a nitpick with rebounding or boxing out on specific plays, but when you had Ian Sheflin next in the front court, a lot of that got covered up, right? So I like Lockin. I actually think Lockin gets drafted in the second round. Like, if I had to make a selection of who I think gets drafted between the two of the Clemson guys that are eligible tonight, I think I would go with Victor Lockin as more likely to be drafted because, again, John, it's just sheerly how many 6'11", 7-footers are there on the planet and in the draft compared to how many 6'4 guards. And you add to the fact that Chase is 24 years old. I think Chase is screaming two-way contract to me as an undrafted free agent, which, again, that's like $600K. That's not bad at all.
That's a good way to earn a living for sure. It's funny looking at positional big boards here for the NBA draft, and I just find it shocking, I guess from like an ROI standpoint, how much higher Victor Lockin is than Hunter Dickinson or Amir Bhalla.
Yes.
And how much those guys cost at the collegiate level.
Yep. And it's because...
I find that just to be very comical that you look at some of these positional boards and near the bottom are like, man, I've been hearing about that guy making high six figures for like 4 years.
Yep, and it's crazy because like you think about a guy like Armando Bacot who gets $2 million to come back to North Carolina and then he's in the G League, and it's going to be the same thing for Dickinson and Ballo and these big men that can't move their feet because that's what the NBA is about. If you can't move your feet, you have no spot in the NBA.
That's why Malach is such a big commodity tonight.
Exactly. That's the perfect point because he can switch and he can move. Like, that is where the NBA has trended if people have not picked up on it already. It goes without saying, but your big man has to be able to switch. Because if your big man can't switch, then when you get in playoff basketball, they're going to put you in a ball screen every possession down the court if they know you have a guy on defense that can't switch onto your guards. And guess what? These guys are good enough to where if you get a switch on Hunter Dickinson with an above-average NBA guard, I kid you not, they're scoring 9 times out of 10. Like, these guys are that good. They're getting to their spots. That is target practice, shoot around, warm up, jump shots if they get that type of switch. So with Malawach, the thing that makes him so effective on top of having a 9'6 standing reach and a 7'7 wingspan at 7'1 is the fact that he's mobile and he can move his feet. And that's why he's going to go in the top 10 of the draft tonight, because he's exactly what you're looking for in a modern NBA big man. So long-winded way on the Clemson folks of saying, I think there's a fairly good chance that Lockin gets drafted in the second. I think it's less likely Chase gets drafted. Again, it doesn't have anything necessarily to do in the second round with what your talent level actually looks like. You're talking to agents, you're talking to teams, you're talking to representatives. You're trying to find a fit to where your guy can stay in the league, has a good summer league spot, and can potentially pave his way to play his way into some playing time in the NBA in the immediate future. And for Chase Hunter, I would much rather him pick his spot where somebody needs a guard and needs a summer league guard and or G League guard than get drafted by a team where he just gets wrapped up in the cycle and then finds himself overseas.
Question for you. Do we have 3 Duke Blue Devils go in the top 10 this evening?
Well, Flag's going one, so that's
right.
A lock.
He's a lock, yes, but I'm looking at Con Knipple and Malach.
Yes.
Both are top 10 guys?
I think Con's going 4 to the Hornets, and I think that's the correct pick.
Really? Why would you say that for the Hornets before we get back to dissecting the Dukies?
I think Con Knipple's the third best player in the draft. I think he is exactly what I would want in a modern NBA guard. And I think we saw in the playoffs this year that the teams that succeed are the teams that have multiple ball handlers that can create their own shot and that can shoot. And if you look at, you know, the Oklahoma City Thunder, Jalen Williams coming into his own as a ball handler that could run and command the offense is a big part of why they unlocked a new level that they reached in the playoffs this year that they didn't have in their arsenal last year. And then you look at the Indiana Pacers on the other side. How valuable was Andrew Nimhard throughout the course of the series being that secondary ball handler next to Halliburton to alleviate some of the pressure? Part of the issue with Charlotte in the past couple years is it's all on LaMelo. They don't have a secondary creator. So, yeah, LaMelo has his flaws, and LaMelo can be a selfish player at times, but LaMelo also doesn't have any level of viable help in his backcourt and has not had a capable backcourt running mate throughout the course of his whole career. If you add Con Knipple, you're not just adding a sharpshooter next to LaMelo Ball in the backcourt. You're adding a guy that's willing to take on the toughest defensive task on the floor night in, night out. He can take you off the bounce. He can create for himself and others. And then most importantly, you can rotate the minutes, which is the new wave for the smart coaches in the modern NBA, like Dagnault does with SGA and Williams, to where when LaMelo isn't on the court, Knipple is handling the ball handling duties. And then when you sub him out, LaMelo comes right back in. I am in love with the fit for Charlotte for Con Knipple. I think you 100% see all 3 Blue Devils go in the top 10 tonight. And I don't know if Malawach makes it past 7 for the Pelicans. I could see there is a non-zero chance of all 3 of them going in the top 5. Let me just say that right now. There's a non-zero chance of all 3 of them going in the top 5. That's where I'm at on the Blue Devils.
Well, and then we get to have everyone who's a Duke hater then you get to have your favorite bit for the next, I don't know, 20 years. How did this Duke team not win a title?
Man, I was on Twitter the other day. I saw a screenshot of this game. Duke was up 67-61 with like 24 seconds left, and Houston had just missed a shot.
I think it was like 54 or something like that.
Yeah, something.
It was under a minute.
Yeah, it was under a minute. They hit a three off offensive rebound. I still think that over the back call on flag was garbage. I hate that the way it got that game got dictated in that way, but it ended up working out in the end. I think we were all kind of rooting for Florida to win the national championship regardless. We'll talk a little bit more draft stuff on the other side, and we'll also hit the Braves because I know Delvin wants to get to that. Don't want to cut Delvin off before the break, so we'll take an early one. Before we get to break, Morgan Coleman is where you need to go with your real estate needs. A proud Clemson soccer alum, an upstate native. She's hung up her cleats, but now she spends her time assisting buyers and sellers in the Greenville area. Her goal is to provide her clients with a peace of mind during one of the most important decisions of their lives. It's important to have early conversations with a trusted realtor to help navigate the current market. And if you are considering buying or selling, Morgan Coleman would love to chat. Give her a call at 864-313-7639 or search Morgan Coleman Real Estate online to get started. Facts on Sports with Faxon and John continues right here on The Roar after a short break.
It's bow time. When you combine the bold taste of a Bojangles Chicken Supreme with dill pickles, Carolina Gold barbecue sauce, and a toasted bun that's great on the go, you get Bo's Bird Dog. In fact, you can grab two of them for $5. Available for a limited time only. It's bow time.
At Toyota of Easley, now is the best time to get a new Toyota Tundra or Tacoma with financing rates as low as 1.99%. We have a huge selection of trucks on the lot and many certified used trucks as well for pleasure or business. Toyota of Easley has the truck that will work for you. Hurry on over and pick out the truck you need today. Call 864-855-2233 to make an appointment or shop toyotaofeasley.com or stop in for a test drive today.
Hey, hon, what's a Vermeer?
Really? Come on, everybody knows that. Vermeer builds vacuum excavation equipment that's changing how underground utility construction is done from right here in Greenville. Soft dig trenchless innovation that can expose underground utility lines without harming them, leaving a softer environmental impact than harsher, more traditional digging methods.
Whoa, you're smart.
Yep, everybody knows that too.
Visit Vermeer.com/dig to see what everyone's talking about.
Another night on a lumpy mattress? Wake up, Greenville. Engineered Sleep's got your back, literally. For 90 years, they've handcrafted eco-friendly mattresses right here in South Carolina. On a budget, the Today mattress starts under $300. Hot sleeper? The Duo mattresses use cooling natural latex, wool, and have dual firmness. Sleep better? Guaranteed with their 100-night trial. Engineered Sleep. Crafted locally, loved nationally. Visit engineeredsleep.com or stop by the Greenville showroom today.
Have you considered the legacy you'll leave behind for your family? The staff at Green Law Firm is here to help you create a legacy you'll be proud of. The best time to plan for the future is now. Whether it's a straightforward will, power of attorney, family trust, or another option, David Green is here to guide you in choosing the right path for you and your loved ones. Call today 864-271-7940 or visit greenlaw.legal so he can start planning your family's legacy together.
Call the plumber whose name is his number one, Tom Plumber.
Anyone know a good plumber? It's an emergency.
One Tom Plumber will be there in an hour, or they'll discount your bill.
In 1 hour?
Yeah, just dial the number one, then Tom Plumber.
That's their name.
That's their number.
Call the plumber whose name is his number one, Tom Plumber. One Tom Plumber.
Hey, ladies. Mark your calendars for the 16th Dabo Sweeney Ladies Clinic, presented by The Roar. Join us on Saturday, July 19th at Little John Coliseum for a day filled with football, shopping, and fighting for a cure for breast cancer. Meet the 2025 Tiger players and staff and shop from over 40 amazing vendors. Registration is open until Friday, June 27th. All proceeds benefit breast cancer initiatives in South Carolina. You can register at dabosallinteam.com. That's dabosallinteam.com. Go Tigers. See y'all in July.
Tuning in from the car?
Flips it for the touchdown!
Stay connected to The Roar after you run your errands using our app or website. Download The Roar app on your phone by searching WCCP-FM The Roar in the App Store. Or tune in on our website, theroarfm.com/listen.
welcome you back in. It's the final segment of hour number one here on a Wednesday with Faxon and John. 654-ROAR is the number. If you'd like to check in on the phone lines or Adams Co. Roofing text line, we've been running through some NBA draft discourse. We're about to shift gears to the Atlanta Braves here in this upcoming segment. So if you'd like to get in on some Braves discourse, 654-ROAR is the number. I will be covering some NBA draft stuff pretty frequently throughout the course of today. Obviously, you get this day once a year. It's draft day. So we'll be breaking down, you know, who's anticipated to go where. We've talked about Flag, Harper, etc. I think a couple teams hold the cards tonight. And one of those teams is Philadelphia at number three, which I want to talk about because they're in a weird situation where they have a big three, per se, in the East with Embiid, Maxey, and Paul George, two of which got hurt last year. And Embiid's generally speaking unreliable as far as a health standpoint goes. But to have three players that are that good and the number three pick, that gives you some flexibility with what you could do. So I think
that, 2.5 players.
Yeah, 2.5 players. Yes.
Joel Embiid, until he is cleared to resume walking again, I'm not going to put him in that camp.
He's got to stay healthy. That's the big thing for Embiid. We know he's great when he can stay healthy, but I don't know what I would do if I were Philadelphia. So we're going to put ourselves in some team's shoes throughout the course of the program as well and talk about options and players and fits and all that good stuff. Let's get Delvin in here on the phone lines. Then we'll head to Seminole. Ted, 654-ROAR is the number. Good to hear from you, Delvin. Appreciate you checking in.
Yeah, thank you for my call. I'm stepping away from the bread. I want to talk. NBA draft, cause it's kind of interesting what Ace Bailey is doing.
Yeah.
Well, I hear a lot of people saying that he's being selfish because he want to play where he can shine, like make it all about him and not worried about being a team player and stuff like that. There's some of the rumors out there, too. That's why he don't want to go to none of these teams because he want to be the one, like, scoring points and do all that stuff, too.
Yeah, that's what Paul George said. Paul George said that he was given some me over team vibes already, and he hasn't even gotten into the NBA yet. So when you have an established, like, listen, we can say what we will about Paul George, and like there are jokes, and the jokes are funny. Paul George is still like a top 75 player ever, right? And like 6'8 skilled wings like that can play two ways. Paul George is a great player all in totality. So to have a guy with that level of acumen and respect in the league come out and say that you're a me over we guy before you even get into the league, I think that's just setting, like, I think that Ace Bailey is setting himself up to start his NBA career on a sour note, regardless of where the destination is at this point.
You know, is Ace going to be at the draft? Because when he gets drafted, I want them to ask him a hard hitting question. I want a little,
yeah,
the little baby question. I want a hard, why did you choose this? Why you think a player like Paul George calls you a me player and all that stuff? I want him to ask him questions after he gets drafted and stuff like that. I want to see what he had to say about it.
He is going to be at the draft, and I hope we get somebody to ask him some hard-pressing questions because I think this is really interesting the way he's elected to go about this route as well, Delvin. And you know, on the front of Bailey, you got to think about this from the players currently existing in the locker room standpoint as well, right? Let's say he goes to the Wizards. Well, if I'm Bub Carrington or I'm Kyshawn George or I'm CJ McCollum or Chris Middleton, like, that team's got vets now. They're not just going to let some kid walk in there and walk all over him and take all the shots and be the number one option overnight. So I don't know if this is going to go how Ace Bailey anticipates. Like, if the projected destination is indeed Washington, which from a basketball standpoint, I don't hate the fit for what it's worth, you have vets that are roadblocking you, and those guys are not just going to give you 20 shots a game and the keys to the franchise without any sort of hesitation or pushback. And to be honest, I think somebody needs to put Ace Bailey in his place pretty quickly amongst coming into the NBA, and maybe that's the right place for him to go is Washington, so Chris Middleton can get in his ear about what it takes to be a winner, because Chris Middleton is the epitome of a winner in the modern NBA. He shaped his game around staying in the league, longevity. He became a really darn good player on both ends, and he has a similar role to what Ace Bailey wants to be with a two-way kind of stretchable wing player. So I don't know, Delvin. I haven't seen a prospect, and I don't mean any disrespect by this, I haven't seen a prospect that's not generational try and do this in the NBA ever. And I think that's what's kind of off-putting to me is I don't really even know if I love Ace Bailey as a prospect or even like Ace Bailey as a prospect.
Yeah, and I'll leave you and John with this. What do you think about some of the trash talking that Thomas Castellanos is doing to Alabama?
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit yesterday. He gave another quote yesterday.
And you think, what do you think about Lenore Sanders coming to him? I love Alabama's a hard team and stuff like that after Thomas Castellanos had his comments by Alabama. And the Alabama players come back at him on Twitter, too. But if y'all can talk about that, but it's interesting.
Yeah, appreciate you checking in, Delvin. We'll get to the Sellers comments and more throughout the course of the program. And we appreciate the call as always, brother. Have a good rest of your day. Thanks, Delvin. 654-ROAR is the number. I didn't see these Sellers comments.
I haven't either. I will look them up once we get Seminole Ted here on the line. But we did about 40 minutes yesterday, an hour or two, on the Thomas Castellanos quotes and things like that. I don't know if we'll have time to get back into it. TheRoarFM.com. Like I said, we did two segments on Thomas Castellanos yesterday and kind of all the nonsense that's coming out of his mouth. So we may get back into that later on, but it's kind of a crazy times there for a 5'9 quarterback of a 2-10 football team to be running his mouth.
Yeah, Sellers gave the quote, shoot, Alabama's still Alabama's to me. They were good last they were good last year. They're a good team. They're big, strong, and fast. That's how I remember watching them growing up, and I don't really think they've changed that much. Obviously, it's a new coaching staff, but it's SEC. It's Alabama. Yeah.
Outside of inserting it's SEC, I agree with everything that he said.
Yeah, that's and that's definitely a message that I'm sure has been passed to him from his SID to push the conference at any juncture possible. That's got to be a part of your media training at an SEC school, right? It's just like you got to push the conference. You got to push the conference.
Oh, it's certainly in, you know, the coaches' meetings.
For sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. They have those talking points nailed down.
Let's get to Seminole Ted on the phone line, 654-ROAR, if you want to check in like Ted. Ted, it's good to hear from you, brother. How we living?
All right, before I get into the Braves talk, so I heard his comments yesterday listening to the Jeff Cameron podcast.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know who he is, but he's up at War Chant and everything. But, you know, when I heard these comments, my heart just sank because I like a little bravado, but you don't poke the bear like that. Because now, if you had a chance of sneaking up on Alabama, they're going to have a bullseye on their back now because of those statements. So I was not happy about all that.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, if this team – game one dictates how this season is going to turn out. You know, if we could beat Alabama, you could be looking at a 9-3 season. If we lose badly to Alabama, you could be looking at another 3-9 season in Mike Norvell's history. You know, so for you to sit there and run your mouth when you're basically a 50% winning percentage quarterback, I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
But, you know, the cat's out of the bag now. You're going to have to put up or shut up. And believe me, if he doesn't put up, a lot of people are going to make him eat crow. All right, now, on to the Braves. Man, what a comeback last night.
Big win,
you know,
man.
Strider didn't have his A game, but I tell you what, man, they have been just been giving away walks like free candy. I'll tell you, I'll take it too, because every single time they can't get the location, boy, you just see the more and more nervousness on their pitchers.
Yep.
I loved it. Braves took advantage with a lot of two-out hitting. You know, it looks like Olsen is finally snapping out of his funk a little bit. You know, I got nothing but positives right now. You know, it doesn't matter how we finish the season, we're still fighting, and that's what I look for more than anything right now is how much fight does this team have? Because Alex has already said I'm not in a seller's market. So, they think they can win with the core team that they have. So I'm looking forward to everything coming forward from the All-Star break and on. I think we got just as good a chance as anybody else. Just got to tweak a few things here and there and just get consistent play. And I think that we're going to be fine. And one thing I will say about messing up with the middle infield, when you look at the defense that our outfield or that our infield plays, we have the fewest errors in baseball, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
You know, you would trade a little defense for a little offense sometimes. You know, people think it's all about the bats, but when you think about it, if you have a hitter that's hitting 300, that means seven other times out of every 10, he's either striking out or getting it out in the field somewhere. So defense is a very important part of this game, and we got a great mojo in the field. But that's all I got. I'll take it off the air. Have a good one.
Love the commentary from Seminole Ted, 654-ROAR, if you want to check in like Ted. And a lot to unpack there. We'll wrap back to Castellanos at some point. But I do want to focus on Braves for now. A couple interesting points. Number one, I made a decree last night on Twitter. If you don't follow me over there at Facts on Sports, Chad the Mailman is banned effective immediately for the next three business days, which is the rest of the week, from slandering Nick Allen. Because Nick Allen had himself a day at the ballpark last night, John. Three hits for Nick Allen. So, Chad, we're shutting down that slander, brother, and we're enforcing that strictly here on the program. If you can hear us out there, you are not allowed to slander this man for the next three business days. We're making that ruling.
Man, you're going to make him sit in the hot mail truck and not be able to slander Nick Allen?
I know. How inhumane of me. I'm so cruel. Such
Golly.
A terrible person. I know. It's just awful. But in all seriousness, I want to take this in a little bit different of a direction before we talk about the game last night, okay? Last night showcased something to me, and it didn't end up necessarily panning out because this player I'm about to talk about, Acuña, had his worst game of the season. He looked human for the first time all year and still walked twice, stole a base, scored a run, and made a diving catch. So even when he goes 0 for 3, Acuña's still finding a way to have a good game, man. That guy's incredible. But I want to say, I saw a couple people tweeting back and forth last night at each other, and a point really, like, stuck out to me. So it goes without saying, John, that Acuña is going scorched earth right now, right? He's best player in baseball, has been since his re-entry into the major leagues after the injury. He has 9 home runs and only 16 RBIs, and part of that is due to the fact that he's leading off. So there is a contention of the Braves fan base that does not want Acuña to lead off because they want him to hit lower in the order where there's going to be runners on in front of him to hit around. Well, my brain works like, okay, we need to improve 8 and 9. I think the 9-hole hitter and the 8-hole hitter for the Braves are almost more important than they are for any other team in baseball right now because of how disappointing and lackluster the middle of your order has been throughout the course of the season. When you have a player like Acuña, obviously, it goes without saying, is one of the best players in baseball, one of the best hitters in baseball, but he's also extremely clutch and good with runners in scoring position and with runners on. The issue here, he doesn't get a chance to hit with runners on. So last night, Nick Allen was getting on, and Acuña wasn't necessarily able to capitalize in that specific game, but I think it started to kind of showcase how much scarier the Braves offense can be with capability out of the 9-hole. So I know we're not slandering Nick Allen today. Again, I tend to agree more with Ted. I wouldn't be mad if Nick Allen was the Braves shortstop for the next 2 years. Go upgrade everywhere else. Play one defender. He's going to win your gold glove this year for the National League at shortstop. But when I'm looking at the deadline, because we have more to discuss because Michael Harris got hurt last night, when we're looking at the deadline, I do think it's worth taking flyers on guys that could potentially improve that bottom of the lineup in a similar fashion to what Anthopoulos did in the deadline in 2021 with Duvall and Soler and Peterson. And I'm not saying go get those specific guys and recreate the magic. You guys know I hate that crap. I'm not in on that stuff. But what I am in on is maybe there's a guy that's a replacement-level major leaguer that has been a good player for a couple of years past that's a veteran that you could potentially find the spark with at the bottom of your order. And if that guy is replacing Michael Harris, if this injury does appear to be long-term, then that could provide a new element to your offense. I think the 9-hole hitter is very, very important, John, for the Atlanta Braves. And after seeing Acuña's numbers last night and doing some research about how many times he's actually come up in situations to knock runners in, let me give you a hint. It's barely any throughout the course of the season, and he's played in almost 30 games. So the Braves need more production out of the 9-hole. Last night showcased why, and we'll unpack the stuff that happened in the actual game now, but I had to get that off my chest.
Nick, real quick, for all of those out there who are clamoring for Ronald Acuña to change his spot in the batting lineup, and gosh, I don't know if there's a fan base out there that likes to argue the lineup more than the Atlanta Braves. Okay, then we're going to go back to the conversation we had in April and May. Who's leading off? The leadoff spot was an unmitigated disaster without Ronald Acuña Jr.
Acuña has to lead off, and that's the correct decision to lead him off. I disagree with the contention of the Braves fan base that wants to move him down. Acuña has to lead off, but part of what coincides with that is you have to find a way at the deadline to strengthen your 7-8-9. You got a black hole at 7-8-9 right now. It's the worst in the bigs.
But how do you do it when those players who are 7-8-9 in the lineup, Alex Anthopoulos has pretty much said he's not going to move?
I don't think you necessarily have to move guys to potentially fit. Like we mentioned, okay, first and foremost, we don't know the status right now on Michael Harris, and Michael Harris got hurt last night. So it's been described that he was avoided any major injuries and avoids the worst case scenario. He got hit in the wrist with a pitch. So we'll see what happens, or a hit in the elbow, rather, with the pitch in the top of the sixth inning. He took the base, came around to score on a 2-run single by Olsen. It appears he's going to be back in the fray. I don't think that Ozzie Albies needs to be starting for this baseball team anymore. And I know that's tough to say and tough to stomach. I just don't really understand what you're getting from him at this point.
But I agree with you. But Alex Anthopoulos has already said we're not doing anything faces that are with long-term team control. And I don't think... I don't think they would send him to the minors, and I don't think that they would just put him on the bench. I really don't. I have a very difficult time believing that Ozzie Albies would not be an everyday player for the Braves as he is on their payroll.
If you call up Nacho, it gives you a little bit more flexibility and versatility with what you can do in your middle infield, and then maybe you can start more of what is a true rotation. Because, listen, I like Allen a lot. I like Allen more than 99% of the fan base. You know, Allen's bat is really bad, and that is truth, and there is validity to those complaints and qualms with his game. If you bring up Nacho, you can give Nacho the spot, start at second base occasionally, give Ozzie a couple days off, or you can play Nacho at short and Ozzie at second and give Nick Allen a day off. I think Nacho needs to be up. I think that goes without saying right now, and he provides you more versatility. As far as the rest of the 7-8-9 and what the Braves need to do to improve that, I think Profar is going to help you immensely because you're going to slot him into the two hole, or maybe he hits fifth, and then you bump everybody else down in a peck in the order, right? And at that point, that the issue is no longer as big as it once was. But with that being said, you still need a corner outfielder at the deadline. I still think you need middle infield help, even if that means Nacho is just coming up for a couple of weeks to try and get his feet wet and see if he can find anything that sticks at the major league level. And ultimately, the Braves have a chance to continue to strike away at this deficit and hole that they've dug themselves in. But the 7-8-9 guys have to be better in front of Acuña, and you have to start capitalizing on those opportunities. I don't know what that looks like. I don't have all the answers, and I'm not the general manager of the team. But what I do know is that the Braves need to make moves, and the Braves need to make moves now. Because they have a window right now before the deadline where they can strike and capitalize and get themselves very much in the playoff picture in the coming weeks. The Braves are only 6 games out of this thing as far as the wild card goes right now. They're back to 4 games within 500, which we mentioned is the closest they've been to 500 since the beginning of the month. They are undeniably trending in the right direction. When you look at the teams that are in front of the Atlanta Braves, you have the Diamondbacks, who we've mentioned, are likely to sell. Corbin Carroll is hurt. Corbin Burns is hurt. Puck has been hurt. Gallen's a shell of himself. I think they're done. I don't know if they won last. I think they're done. We're going to get 3 months down the road, and the Diamondbacks are not going to be a part of this picture for much longer. The Padres are in freaking free fall. 5-5 in their last 10, they have gone from commanding the number one spot in the wild card race to now they're not even in the tide for the third spot. They're a half a game out of the picture. Now, with that being said, the Brew Crew and the Cardinals have started to heat up a little bit while the Mets and the Giants have started to wane. So you have movement upwards and downwards the ladder in this wild card race. Braves are going to be able to catch the Diamondbacks. I think the Braves are good enough to probably catch the Reds and potentially the Padres, but the current rendition of the Braves is not good enough to make the playoffs, and I still think you need to make moves. So we'll talk about the game last night, some of the decisions made down the stretch and how the Braves were able to hold on, and then Matt Olson's excellence as that continues in the second hour of the program right here on The Roar.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson, WAHT-AM 1560.